Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on hatred for the enemy. They have a policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media and just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say, fuck them. That's straight from my...
Well, hello there.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much. Just me and you.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Is your guest calling in?
He should be. Let me text him again. But, I talked to, I was with Bill today, and had a good time. Talked about a few things, and I extended the invitation that was extended to me for Saturday. We're going to a movie premiere.
Nice.
With about 400 people. And Bill says, well, are we going to spend the night? I said, why? Are you an old guy who can't ride 65 miles to go home?
Yeah, he needed to know if he should pack a clean pair of underwear for the morning.
Exactly. So, he's still got some stuff going on, so said to say hello to everybody, and he hopes to be back soon.
Well, we definitely miss him, that's for sure.
Yeah. And Juan Lopez is going to call back tonight so we can finish the discussion. And if I don't hear from him, we'll call him.
Okay.
You know, he had some stuff going on, and someone else is supposed to call in and is doing something, and is going to sneak to the bathroom and call us.
Sneak to the bathroom. Now, that's a new one. Sneak to the bathroom and call the Phil and Bill Show. That's great.
Yeah.
Are they out of country? Do they have to hide their phone call or what?
No, doing some, actually she's working.
I got it. Yeah. The good old, I got to go to the bathroom and make a phone call, send a text message.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's too funny. That's how important you are, Phil. People take bathroom breaks for you.
Exactly. My camera was send pictures.
Oh, you're so wrong. It's just so wrong.
So, yeah, it's just a lot of things going on. And I'm going to try to see about, a few things. I'm going to somebody wants to buy my Dyna. But it's not for sale.
And yeah, because you're gonna leave it. You're gonna leave it in your will to your sister from another mister, right?
No, you might have some kids who want to fight you over that one.
Oh, but dude, by the time that time comes, you'll have like 10 other bikes. Just send that one east. That's all. I won't be. I'll probably be in a nursing home somewhere. Won't have a clue as to what it even is.
Yeah, well, if you're that far gone, you should just steal one and do it.
Yeah, that would be great. Soon enough, it's coming soon enough. I've waited this long, you know. I can just be patient.
Yeah, I've told people for forever. People that know me, my close friends, know that if I ever got told I had a year to live, I was dying of cancer. For the first 364 days, would be hell on wheels. The last day, you would see the greatest motorcycle chase in San Diego history.
Oh, fuck yeah. That's so funny because I always said, man, if I knew, like if they told me you got less than 3 months to live, I've told people, oh, my God, you ain't going to be able to keep up with me because the shit I'm going to do is just going to be, like, outlandish. Not to hurt anybody or take from anybody, but I'm going to go crazy. And that'll be it.
Huh? Hey, like, arrest me? For what? How many of you going to be here?
Exactly. Exactly. That's the same logic I would have. I'd be like, whatever, put me in jail. I'll go shoot anyway.
Yeah, you better take me to night court because I'm not going to be here for the other one.
Dude, we don't got night court over here. And the only way, really, that I knew night court even existed was because of that old sitcom show called Night Court.
Yeah.
With the funny magician judge there. But I never, you know, because over here, courtrooms close down around 4 o'clock. Everybody better be out of the building at 5. They don't have no night court, at least in this area. I can't vouch for Western Mass or maybe more towards the Boston-type area, but I've never heard of it in this direct area. Yep, nobody works past 5 that's politically based over here.
Yeah, if they take you to night court here, yeah, they're tied up for almost about 8 hours.
Jesus. That's crazy. Now,
I know
in New York, you know, New York, but New York's a bigger city. It handles a lot more people, you know, coming and going. New York has night court. They hold court all day long. But again, California, too, has a lot of people coming and going. So, I mean, I guess I would think it's got to be something to do with how much population is in the area. Now, would it shock me if we landed up doing, you know, getting a night court system here in the next 10 years? Absolutely not, because of the rate of drugs and crime and violence. They said today, Phil, I read an article this evening, 91 people since January have died from an opiate-style overdose in the tiny little state of Rhode Island, whether it be pain pills, that methadone crap, heroin, yeah. And I mean, I had said to you like a week or two ago that the city, Fall River, Mass, 3/4 of the city is strung out, and that's like 1 in every 3 people is hooked on something. But when they said 91 deaths just in Rhode Island, and I mean, you can drive around the whole state of Rhode Island in less than a day. That's insane. That's like out of control. They need to get a grip on it and do something about it.
Yeah, they. Yeah, they have. I don't know if you heard. Well, speaking of small states, you know, Connecticut. The Supreme Court in Connecticut just gave the guy. He stood behind the First Amendment right to free speech. Because he ordered his DMV plates, license plates for his car that say, cops lie.
Oh, my God.
Will be issued that plate, those plates. I seen that shit yesterday, and I'm going to the DMV next week and see about if I can challenge the state of California to that.
I don't see why not. You can have everything else on a license plate. Why? Because it's a law enforcement thing, you know.
Yeah. The first
The first
set of license plates I ever had on my car.
Yeah.
Said Ba Fungu.
Said what?
Ba Fungu. Fuck in Italian.
Yeah.
Mhm.
What does it mean?
Fuck. The word fuck.
Oh, you had it like spelled out in Italian?
Yeah.
Jesus. That's funny. I know this much. The kid I went to high school with, he had a fat ass classic car back in the day, and he was the only kid I knew, and I used to be stuck on stupid about it. His license plate said AC/DC on it, and it had a number after it. But in between the AC and DC, there was 2 lightning bolts. And
yeah.
To this day, I've never seen any other plates with, like, little designs like that on them, and I was just always stuck on stupid about it, you know, because I didn't realize they could do shit like that. But I guess if you push issues hard enough, you can get what you want, you know?
Exactly.
So where is everybody tonight? It's awfully quiet.
Oh, they're all outside doing some shit outside. No van tonight. I'm really surprised.
They're out getting their coffee and donuts, dude. Come on.
But it's funny how everybody considers honesty a virtue, yet no one wants to hear the truth, you know?
Yeah, amen to that.
Yeah. Let me, I'll give it a minute. I'm gonna call, I'll call him after this. I'm trying to find this, video. And, but anyway, Ron's gonna, or Juan's gonna call and talk to us about, he's running for office, and, we'll let him tell you what office and that, and then, Evelyn's supposed to, she was one of the champions that got him able to put on the ballot because they fucked him over twice or some shit. I'm not sure exactly how that went down, and I didn't mean to say some shit, but I'm trying to do two things at once, and my train of thought is running 100 miles an hour. But I got an email today, and I know
these,
if they're not able to listen today, but they'll be able to hear this in the archives, but someone wanted me to play that video where it says, "Don't talk to the cops."
Okay.
By the New York detective. So let me get that rolling here.
If you didn't see the Central Park 5 documentary, go see that. When I saw that, I only had like 4 years on the job at the time. So I was just learning. But what really was heartfelt was when you looked at those young boys, and I know the whole story. When you look at those young boys who was crying and pouring out for help, and they thought they were going to get it from their parents, the parents didn't even know how to protect their kids when it came to law enforcement. That's why we educate the community on what to do when stopped by the police. We educate parents because parents don't know, even if you do, which you shouldn't. But if you do give the police department the permission to talk to your loved one, if you do, at any given time, you can stop it. At any given time. But you never should give the police department the permission to speak to your loved one if they're arrested. We tell the young folks out there, don't speak to them. I'm going to use part of my time to just give you a simple demonstration of what I teach young kids. When you're walking down the street, you get a call and the police get a call. If the police stop you and the area, I'm going to give you a Saturday night, whatever area you're at, and the police stop you. Do you know why they're stopping you? They're stopping you because you're the only one in that vicinity. So right then and there, you are the perpetrator. You don't know you're the perpetrator because they're not going to tell you you're the perpetrator. What they try to do is stop you by engaging you, "How you doing, sir?" or whatever. "Sir, did you see a car? Did you hear a gunshot? Did you see somebody run?" And what you think is you think, because you're not the perpetrator, right? You tend to think, "Well, let me help them out, or let me defend myself." You don't have to defend yourself. The burden of proof is on them. Keep your damn mouth shut. This is what I tell the young folks, that if that was to happen to you as you're walking, you say, "Officer, am I under arrest?" "No, you're not under, well, then I must be free to leave." And then you start to leave. "Let him or her take." "No, you can't leave." "Well, then, officer, am I under arrest?" No, you're not. Well, then I must be free to leave. Well, no, I want to ask you something. Well, officer, am I under arrest? You keep saying that because let me tell you something. If the police had the right to arrest you, do they ever ask you? They do it. So I teach, you just say that. When the officer says, well, listen, you're not under arrest. I just want to know, did you see a car? Did you hear a person scream? Did you hear gunshots? You don't, officer, am I under arrest? And if they say, well, you know, you're smart because you know what comes behind that, right? Okay, officer, you're under arrest. Okay, officer, you turn around and you put your hands behind him and say, here, take me. Here. But you don't say nothing. Say, 9 times out of 10, they're going to push you away because they're going to say, you know, if they don't have enough, they're going to say, I can't lock this person up. But what you just did is you showed them you're not afraid to get arrested. The other way you handle that situation is you do this. A cop stops you. Excuse me. You live around here. This is what you do. And you look him or her straight in the eye and you just do this. Excuse me, did you hear what I said? Do you live around here? Can you tell me your name? It's easy. Just don't say nothing. Now they got a decision to make. Either lock you up, beat you up, or let you go. Now there's going to be some derogatory statements coming behind that. But you know what? I guarantee you that 99% of the time, at the end of that confrontation, you'll be walking like this in a way and on your way. That's what you do. Stop trying to prove to them that you're not the person they're looking for. That's up to them to do. Another thing, know your rights. In this book, it's only about 28 pages. I give you what you should do when you're stopped by the police, what you should do if the police come knocking at your door, what you should do if the police stop you at your car, in your car, what the passengers should do, what to do if you're brought to a police precinct because some people don't know what to expect, what to do after you've been violated by the police, how to fight them back, and get in touch with our organizations because we will come out. We will help you. I can't go down to CCRB anymore. They don't want me down there. Because when I've escorted people down there, they say, you can't come in. You know why? Because when I went down there with some people that they play semantics with a person's words. And I'm sitting there and I said, listen, if this lady said the officer slapped her, then the officer slapped her. You don't have to say to her, well, did the officer inadvertently put his hand up? What are you talking? She's a grown woman. She knows if she's been slapped, just like grown men. They know if they've been hit or violated. You know, stop making excuses for the police officer. Well, they told me you can't come down here anymore. You know, it's all right. It's okay, because if I can educate enough and you can stand and use that backbone in your spine and stand up for what's right, you'll be okay. Because when you leave there, you got us. You got us, and you're going to have your community behind you if they just would stop being scared.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to call up Juan.
Okay.
Hi, Juan.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you? It's Philip. We're calling you. And I figure we'd pick up the conversation where we left off last week.
Absolutely.
For everybody that's listening, this is Juan Lopez. He's from up north in San Mateo County, and he's running for public office, and I'll let you take it from there, Juan.
Okay. My name is Juan Lopez. I've got 26 years with the agency, and I'm running for sheriff against the current incumbent person that's there. So you told me that you had a number of questions that you wanted to ask.
Yeah, some people wanted to know what you felt about the police who get – or officers who get caught – okay, here's the situation. A guy was in his front yard. He was standing on his porch. An older lady was crossing the street, and the officer started yelling at her. And this guy said, hey, leave her alone. She's just an old woman. And he proceeded to go in and talk to this guy, loud, obnoxious, tempers up. And the guy told him, I'm recording this. The guy said, you know, you can't record me, all this, da-da-da-da. But he recorded the whole thing where he recorded him yelling at the woman and everything. He gets arrested. His phone gets taken. And everything disappears off his phone.
Wow, that should be a clue.
Mm-hmm. And the mayor, they talked to the chief. They're doing an investigation. They're using an outside source to use the investigation. They're trying, once you delete something on a phone,
it's
never
still
deleted.
You have the, yeah, the mirror image is there on the, on whatever drive it's working on. So, I mean, it can be recuperated.
Exactly.
It takes a lot of work, but it can. But in all actuality, number one, why was the officer yelling at the older lady crossing the street?
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to see what the circumstances were, but in my book, in all honesty, if there's an older lady crossing the street, it's not to yell at her. I would probably try to help her to make her cross safely, especially if it's a busy intersection.
That's the way I
but
felt.
And well, looking at the circumstances given, everything that you told me, I think the officer might need some type of help. He might be going through something, and his personal life is at issue. He doesn't need to bring that to work. I know we're all human. We're all capable of making mistakes. However, when you're entrusted with the community's trust, you don't want to violate that. I mean, we spoke about this last week. I'm a firm believer in your word is your bond. And if you don't
exactly
have that, then I think it's time for you to find another job.
Exactly. And this guy got suspended, I think, for one day for doing an outside investigation. He went to court, charges were dismissed, but this guy wants his day in court. They were offering him money. He doesn't want that. He wants the guy fired.
I can understand his position. I mean, in a situation like that, me personally, if I was in charge of an agency, I would try to find out why that person reacted like he did. Because, again, I mean, normally the guy could be a great employee and maybe something happened to cause him to do that. And, you know, as an administrator, your job is to try to find out what happened and make sure it doesn't happen again. I mean, you don't want this person snapping like that again. So, again, there's a lot more going on behind the scenes, and that's where your administration needs to step up and find out what's going on. And if the person just happened to be one of those people that squeaked by a background, you know, but he shouldn't really be in that line of work, then, you know, maybe you may want to try to find him another type of employment, or at least something else where he's not dealing with the public. Because I know nowadays it's hard for people to lose jobs, but I mean, in all reality, we work for the public. So we have to make sure that they get what they're paying for. We're not there to belittle people. We're not there to put people down or take people to jail for no reason at all. we're entrusted with the public's trust, and it should never be violated.
I agree with you 100%. It's like I said before, I'm not adversarial against the police. I just don't like the guys that don't do what they're supposed to.
Absolutely. And like I said, unfortunately, every job has people that shouldn't be there. And law enforcement especially has a tendency of, that's all it takes is one person to do something wrong and we're all painted with the same brush. But after the Rodney King incident, every vehicle stop, people were recording me, and I'd look and smile, and again, I would let them know because they thought that they were doing something great, and it's like I'd tell them, I said, please, I said, make sure you get my best side, you know, and I'm a firm believer in talking with people, and, you know, we're all human. We all pretty much put our pants on one leg at a time, so.
Yeah, I had, I'll tell you a little story. I had my day in court with seven guys, and the judge told me that he would dismiss the charges in the interest of justice, and because my 4th, 14th, and 5th Amendment rights were trampled on. And about an hour after the initial guy did it, the sergeant came and talked to me, and I talked to him. I told him what happened. He told this guy, you fucked up. I stood right there and watched him tell him, in plain English, you fucked up. You cannot take that shit from people. You can't, if they won't take it off their head, and it was my helmet, if they won't take it off their head, you can't take it off without a warrant.
Yeah.
And just because you don't like the helmet the guy is wearing, you can't take it off. I think the first clue, Juan, was on the front of my helmet. It says, warning, insensitive prick.
I mean, again, that's part of freedom of speech. I mean, we're not always going to say something that everybody likes, whether it's written, whether we say it, whatever the instance may be. So, yeah, I understand.
And then when I wouldn't take it off, that's when I got handcuffed for my own safety.
Wow.
And got it ripped off my head.
Wow.
In front of a movie theater with about 300 people coming out of the movie. Me and clearly hollering, not do this. You don't have a warrant. You cannot, you know what I mean? I don't give up my rights.
Uh-huh.
Da, 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 da. So we subpoenaed the video from the theater.
I was going to say, normally the theaters have video up front, so.
We subpoenaed that. We got that. And then he told me that I couldn't, when he first stopped me, I pulled out my recorder and I set it on the seat of the motorcycle. And he told me, I don't give you my permission to record me. And I said, I don't need your permission as long as I tell you I'm turning it on. So that's, and once he handcuffed me, that got turned off. And then he's trying to figure out how to erase it. But yet the whole time, he's wearing a mic and it's all being recorded in the car. So I tell my attorney, as we kibitzed about what we were going to do and how we were going to fight this, I told him about that, so he subpoenaed the copy of the recording. Well, when they got to court, they didn't have a copy because they sent me the original. Absolutely. They didn't have a copy of it. That's one of the reasons they dismissed everything, because they had no... I had it, and I don't have to give it to them. They sent it to me, so it became my property.
Absolutely.
So, needless to say, long story short, it took me 2 weeks as I went try to go back to the property room and get my stuff. That as soon as I pulled into the parking lot, whether I was on my bike or in my car, it closed.
Wow.
So I had to go back to court, tell the judge what happened, and he called up and had him sent me right from the courthouse, and then he had me call him from there to tell him that I got my stuff back. And he wrote a letter to the department about...
Yeah. Again, I like I said before, unfortunately, this job especially, I'm sure there are others that drop people that shouldn't be in this line of work. So...
Yeah.
No, I my hat's off to you for being patient.
Oh, you know, I yesterday on the way home, I stopped to meet my my attorney, he's a younger kid, pretty sharp. Yeah. And I don't know if I told you about the guy who was writing for the helmet tickets and the sunglasses.
Yes.
33 cases were heard yesterday, 22 were dismissed, and 11 people didn't bother to show up.
Wow.
So their fines are going to stand. But this guy got, out of the 33, he got 22 dismissed.
That's good. That's really mm-hmm. good. That should have told the judge something that, hey, there's a problem here.
Yeah, he tried to say something about the crown, and this guy was writing for sunglasses, and most of the sunglasses that come out nowadays have that wide brim on the side.
Yes.
So this guy's writing that if it's more than 5/8 of an inch, it blocks your peripheral vision. It's not even in the code book. You don't have to wear glasses.
I was going
to
say, you can't make things up like that.
Exactly.
Not too sharp.
No. And then I got a text from Evelyn. She said she was going to try and sneak off to the John and give us a call.
Okay, great. Great. Yeah, no,
yeah.
Things, we're coming close here towards the end, so trying to continue hitting the floor running every chance I get.
Yeah.
Information. I'm with you there, or, you know, everybody should be treated the same.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter where you live.
No, and I think I told you, my argument with the guy the first time I got pulled over for my helmet was, well, I really don't understand why mine's unsafe and you painted yours and drilled a hole in it.
Wow, you're absolutely correct.
Hmm? It's a safety issue, but yeah, you painted yours and you drilled a hole in it.
Yeah.
Well, we're not talking about me. Okay. Conversation's done. I'd like to talk to a supervisor.
Did he? Okay.
No. They pretty much know me around here and been here for almost 30 years. So they pretty much know who I am. The older guys get it. It's the young Turks. And you know what I mean when I say young Turks.
Absolutely, I do.
And
they
get really pissed off. They walked in. Well, one of the guys went into my friend. The guy does a show with me. Bill has a motorcycle shop in Oceanside. It's called Kennedy's Custom Cycles. And these guys come in there and get their bikes worked on and everything. But once I started shooting back, they told those guys they couldn't go down there no more. So they got a new guy who they hired, and he came in and said, you know, I'm kind of okay. They said not to do this, but I heard, you know, you guys do good work, and I like somebody to work on my bike that knows what the fuck's going on. And then Bill said, well, you know, the department, and he said, well, look, you know, I heard some stories about your partner. He said, you know, they really had a lot of respect for that guy, but now he's just a pain in the ass.
Wow.
The guy that was pulling over people with the helmets, I told him, Bill gets at least 3 or 4 calls a week because this guy's been doing it for the last few months. And I told Bill, tell him to call and tell him they just got robbed. They just got strong-armed on the side of the road and see what happens. And nobody will do it. I can't get him to pull me over now.
Yeah, he's probably already leery of what you might say or do.
Yeah, unless I popped a wheelie or something or did something really outrageous, but I can't get him to pull me over. But
wow.
Enough about me and what's the police. And somebody else asked a question. They asked how you felt about the blue line or the blue wall.
The blue wall.
Mm-hmm.
Which blue wall?
Well, it's like, you know, the police have the blue wall.
Oh, you mean us versus them type of situation?
Right.
Well, again, like I try to, when I used to train people, I used to tell them all the time, I said, don't think by you putting on a uniform and a badge, you're any different. You're the same person you were when you walked in here this morning as when you're working. And I used to let people know, you know, everything you do always comes back. I said, if you treat people like you want to be treated, you know what, you'll never have a problem. And again, unfortunately, every law enforcement agency has a few of that sneak through and end up working for us, and
yeah,
they have a tendency of trying to abuse their power, and that's where a person as a training officer has to let them know, you know, no, we don't do that. You know, you have to call their attention to it. And first time, it's talk with them and you let them know. The second time, you not only talk with them, but you start documenting that issue. Because it's something called vicarious liability. Everybody that's trained that person, if he does something down the road, is responsible. If he had those same traits and you didn't try to correct them at the time. And my thing, again, treat people like you want to be treated. Treat people like if you were stopping your own sister, your own brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your mom.
Your mom, yeah.
You know, everybody deserves the same respect and courtesy that the next person gets. You know, if the person decides to take it somewhere else, then that's understandable. Do what you need to do to do your job and move on. But, again, people have a tendency of thinking the uniform makes them a different person. Well, it doesn't. The uniform doesn't make anything. You're the one who makes the uniform and the badge. So that was my main thing when I'd be training people.
Mm-hmm.
I teach them to stop, park, get out of the car, walk and talk with people in your neighborhood that you patrol. Because they're the ones that are going to give you the information. They're the ones that one day if something happens and you need help, they're the ones that are going to be there. And if you've done nothing but antagonize them or anger them in any way, when you need it, nobody's going to be there.
Mm-hmm. It's like I told you, when I was a kid, we had the neighborhood cop. And the one thing I did tell you was that my dad, I don't know if you like Chicago, the politics, you have the ward committee men, you have the precinct captain. My father was a precinct captain. He worked for the city. So it was a lot of times where somebody's kid did something, they would come and see my dad. Hey, we got 6 votes in the house. We need your help with this. They said this. This is what actually happened. And then my dad would find out what really happened, you know, and then the deals were made behind closed doors. And they always knew. They could tell by looking at you, too, because they've seen you from when you grew up to where you're at, whatever age they grab you. So they know how you are. They know all your tendencies.
Absolutely. And, again, that's, like I say, by you actually taking the time to walk and talk with people, you get to know people. I mean, it can be something as simple as the guy that's always working on his yard. You know what? Pull over, get out as you walk by, talk to him. Hey, just wanted to let you know I've noticed you're always in the yard working. Great yard. Just wanted to tell you you're doing a great job. Keep up the work. I mean, a simple contact that's a positive contact like that will go a long way. Because, again, most times people deal with law enforcement, it's normally because they're being pulled over and stopped. There's a problem at home and the police are called. It's not like the firemen where, you know, you call them, hey, my cat's stuck in the tree.
Yeah.
And they come over and pull them down, so... our contacts always have a tendency of having some type of negative result. And again, just because we stop someone doesn't mean we always have to cite them. You have that discretion. And hopefully the person that's working has the discretion enough to say if many instances when I stop someone, you know, whether it's a stop sign, red light, whatever, and I pull them over and I walk up and ask them for their information. And, of course, why did you stop me? I said, as soon as I get your information, I'll explain the reason for the stop. They give me their information. I said, well, I said, what do you think you did wrong back here at the light? And then they sort of look at you and they go, well, yeah, I sort of rolled it. Okay. What could happen, you know, if you roll that light? Well, I can get into an accident and hurt someone. I said, okay. So you run their license, make sure everything's okay, make sure the vehicle's registered. And a lot of times I would hand them back their information, and they'd look at me and they'd go, well, what, no ticket? I said, no. I said, a citation is a learning experience. I said, you were able to tell me what could happen, you know, if, you know, something occurred. I said, if I cited you, it would defeat the purpose of me asking you. And they'd look at me and they'd go, wow, thanks. And I guarantee you, most people will walk away from something like that thinking, you know, I need to be a little more careful. I better drive a little safer. That guy was okay.
Yeah. I had, I won't say his name, but this guy showed me something. And he said, Phil, give me your driver's license. And he's a sergeant. He's like 20 years on the force. So I know him for maybe 15 years, and I handed him my license. And he starts twirling in his fingers and running his fingers over my license, and I go, what are you doing? He goes, are you an asshole on your last stop? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, there's a pen mark from the point here. He said, and just between officers, you know where I'm going with this, just between officers, that's how we check your license. If you were an asshole on your last stop, that's how we know you're an asshole.
Wow.
Have you ever done that?
Never heard of that one, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, that's what I said. So now every once in a while, you know, if I do get pulled over, the first thing I do when they hand me my license is check for a pen mark. Favorite two words for me, you know, my partner Bill, his favorite two words, and I'm beginning to get the concept until I hear what they say, and his favorite two words are, shut up. When you get pulled over, shut up. Let them talk to you.
Yeah, a lot of times we have a tendency of trying to talk to people to try to find out what's going on, and like I said, most of the time, as long as people are honest with me, as long as we talk and they understand what they did wrong, for me that was good enough.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't need to write a ticket. Again, a citation is a learning experience, and that's if somebody doesn't already know what they did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you always get those people that just stop, and you know why I'm stopping you? Nope. You didn't have a problem back there at the stop sign? Nope. Okay. And a lot of times I would have something there to help document the fact that they ran it. So, you know,
yeah,
everybody,
I mean,
like to say when...
Go ahead.
I was going to say it depends on the person. Every person is different. You have those people that are very jovial and have a tendency of being friendly. And you have those that always seem to have a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah.
I mean, and those are the ones you try to make their life a little easier, you know, so that way they'll hopefully get rid of that chip.
Yeah, they kind of like, one time Bill and I were down on 101, which in the town it's called Coast Highway, but on the street it's all marked with the 101. And it was 35 miles an hour. We were going northbound. They were sitting on the southbound side, facing east, looking at traffic.
Uh-huh.
Bill and I went by. They pulled out behind us. They pulled us over. They didn't talk to me first. They talked to Bill. They pulled us over, and I want to inform you, Mr. Kennedy, that you were doing 37 in a 35. But we're not going to cite you today. Not going to cite you. Just wanted you to know that you were doing 37 in the 35. Me, they knew it was me with Bill, and they didn't even bother with me. But they did it just to do it. It was just to let us know that they know that or they're looking, you know.
Uh-huh.
Well, when you what gave you the first notion that you wanted to run for office? Not to switch gears, but I want to get your story out.
Well, I mean, I've been there for 26 years, and I've watched the agency change. And unfortunately, some of the things aren't for the better. So I've seen morale take a big dip. I've seen officers being moved, or shall I say deputies, being moved without reason. So, I mean, there's a lot of things. I've seen our agency going in one direction, and I felt that it should be going in a different direction. I think instead of being reactive, we should be proactive, you know. And again, like I told you last week, I'm a firm believer in educating staff, not only school-wise, but also training, because a well-educated, a well-trained person is somebody that's going to be much more professional, somebody that will be more well-rounded to deal with people on a daily basis. And I'm a firm believer in giving our customers, which is the public, to the best of our ability.
Mm-hmm.
And if your ability's at a low end, I mean, that's what the service you're going to get. If your person's trained and educated, again, that's the type of service you get. And I'm a firm believer in giving everybody the best that I can. You know, and if I tell them, you know, I will do this, or I'm going to check this for you and I'll get back to you, I expect people to do that. Again, you treat people the way you want to be treated.
Exactly. Perfect. You're. I mean, I deal with a lot of law enforcement,
uh-huh.
Sometimes more so than I really want to, but... I get it's like I get amazed sometimes when I hear talking from the heart.
Well, that's,
you know,
that's how
you're like my other friend. You're like my friend that I wasn't going to say his name, but his name is Chris. His first name is Chris, and
uh-huh.
It's like I feel like I'm talking to Chris right now.
Yeah. Well, one of the other things. That the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing is I worked investigations for a little over 8 years. And when I was assigned to a city, Palo Alto, in our
mm-hmm.
county, it was East Palo Alto years back was the murder capital of the United States. And it's only 2.3 square miles. But yet it had a number of homicides that just went through the roof. Anyways, when I was there, I was pretty much assigned to start working sex crimes, to specialize in that. And I've got to tell you, it was probably the worst time that I've ever had working for an agency, for the mere fact that I was very, very good at what I did. However, I'd get home and I couldn't sleep, just thinking about the atrociousness of what went on.
Mm-hmm.
And back in 2007, our agency closed our sex unit.
Yeah, you were telling me about that, and like
yeah.
like I said, you told me the other day they gave you a one sentence about that in an article.
Yeah, pretty much. And I was shocked for the mere fact that, I mean, our community and our children are should be sacred. They should be protected pretty much at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you see it on the news all the time. You know, you've got these predators coming on campus, touching the kids, some doing other things and running off. And if you had a unit that was basically assigned to do nothing but investigate these crimes as well as monitor our sex predators, our sex registrants, you would be able to limit things from occurring in your area. I mean, we don't really have anybody to go out and check, okay, this person registered to this address. You know, this person registered that he works at this location. You know, when's the last time anybody has gone out, knocked on his door, hey, how you doing? Just checking to make sure you live here. Go in and check his clothing, make sure that he is living there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had cases in the past where people were registered to one address, and I'd show up and knock on the door, and somebody else would open it. And I'd look at them, and I'd go, well, who are you? I said, well, I live here. I'm so-and-so. Well, what about this person? Well, he's the one who rented me the apartment. So now I found out this guy registered to one address when, in fact, he lives somewhere else. So
wow.
How many kids are around in that, in when it, let's say if he does register and he lives at that address, how many kids are in the neighborhood? And do the families know?
Yeah, there's down here by me out in East County, which is East County, is kind of barely, you know, sparsely populated. Some people like living out by the desert. But they got a guy, they're going to, I guess the state owns a fire station or something that they closed down, but they're going to house this. They're going to house this guy in a barracks that they use for the firemen.
Yes.
And the people out there don't want him there, just for that reason, little kids and other things.
Yeah, if there's kids in the area, I mean, you don't want to put people in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, these people have to live somewhere, but however, you should use every tool necessary to make sure that people are safe. You know, especially the kids. Kids are very vulnerable.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, we hear about it all the time down here. Guys driving around, exposing themselves to the kids walking to school and stuff. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I thought I lost you. We got a little static. I can't clear it up. I'm not sure what it is, but so the sex crimes unit was the only unit that they walked away from, or is there anything else that
no,
you're
they've
change?
Also the domestic. They got rid of our domestic violence unit. That's another one. I mean, that's still a hot topic from when OJ went
mm-hmm.
through that case with his wife.
Right.
And it was a big political issue, and it still is. They've created laws that pretty much tie our hands on what we can do and what we can't do. Anytime there's a domestic violence type of call, if somebody complains of any type of physical contact, I mean, we're forced to arrest people. I mean, years back when I started, you were able to say, okay, we got in an argument. You know, she pushed me, I pushed her, there's no marks. Okay, you go stay somewhere else tonight. And,
yeah.
You know, when things calm down, then you guys can talk things out.
Yeah, we just had a guy.
Logged on.
Yeah, we just had a guy from San Diego PD. They arrested him April 24th, and he got out the next day. And Tuesday, he got arrested again for beating up his wife.
Wow. And then, again, that should be part of the unit, is making sure that those detectives are able to give classes to different communities. I mean, how many times have church groups, school groups, neighborhood watch people say, hey, you know, I'd love to find out about that topic. Is there somebody to speak about it?
Mm-hmm.
I believe local law enforcement, especially in something like that, should, you know, say, yeah, you know, we have our detectives that do that. You know what? We'll put you in contact, and maybe they can put together a class for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that should be a give me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and you know the track record down here with San Diego PD with the – we're working on the fourth guy now for pulling women over and doing things.
Wow.
Yeah, after shit came to the surface.
Yeah, that's, again, unfortunately, this line of work attracts people that shouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you have to learn to weed them out.
Yeah, or they go bad while they're there, too.
Yeah, absolutely. They have a tendency of being getting away with something, and they continue pushing the buck a little further, and then that's where, again, other law enforcement agents that are there, mm-hmm. once they start seeing something happen, that's where they need to step up and you know, bring it to someone's attention. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to do because, again, people say, well, it's not affecting me and I don't want to get involved. Well, no, it's affecting you whether you know it or not. You know, mm-hmm. you need to bring it out.
And this is on your to-do list, am I correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a number of things, like training. That's like we spoke earlier. I'm a firm believer in educating and training. It helps to change people, open their eyes, you know, to different ways of doing things. So, firm believer in that. Teach people to get out of their cars and talk with the public.
Yeah, that's. Is it a laundry list or is it?
Oh, that's just the beginning of the list. Trust me, there's a lot of things. One of the big things that I love to do is years back they closed our honor camp to save money, and it's way out in the middle of an area that is sort of wooded. It's a beautiful area. It used to be an old Boy Scout camp. Well, instead of having it just sitting there emptied, I would love to bring in something like a program for kids. I was involved in a place called Grizzly Youth Academy. For any of your listeners that have kids that are in between the ages of 16 and 18 that are going through difficult times, whether it's with parents that have gotten divorced, because kids have a tendency of going through difficult times, whether they've turned to alcohol, whether they turn to drugs, you know, they start falling in their grades at school. I've got to tell you, this place amazed me.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing from my, you know, that I went through a divorce, my youngest one had a few issues. When he was with me, I made sure all his homework was done and everything was the way it was supposed to be. Mom felt that she could befriend him by allowing him to do pretty much whatever he wanted. His grades started slipping, and once his grades went from 4.0 all the way down to 1.6, I ended up finding this program. The greatest thing in the world, I've got to say. Their success rate is 98%, which is unheard of. But it's basically like a camp at a National Guard station in San Luis Obispo. And they tell you, because you have to go and you fill out an application. The program runs $32,000 to $35,000 for 6 months, but it's paid for through grants from the state and the feds. So as long as you fill out the 22-page application, you go down, and they have a day where the parents go with the kid, and the kid is separated from the parents, and parents go into a classroom. They get a tour of the facility, and if accepted, because the kid has to take an interview, and if they accept them to the program, they basically live on that base for 6 months. Well, across the street from that camp is Polytech University. So a lot of the students there that are working on their bachelor's and their master's in teaching donate their time to that academy. So these kids in 3 months get 6 months worth of credit. So within the 6 months, they're getting a year of high school credit. And it's a very intense learning program, as well as it's militaristic. They're up at 5 in the morning, standing by their bunks. They go through, take roll, and then there they put on their sweats, go outside, and they start their physical training. They teach them how to march. And I've got to tell you, you can't see your kid for the first month and a week until they have a day called Family Day. And you go up, you take your barbecue and stuff, and you get to barbecue with them. Anyways, I showed up on that day, and my son was standing behind me. I didn't realize it as I was unloading the car, and he taps me on the shoulder. And as I turn around, he's standing there in full uniform, standing at attention. Then he starts crying, and he hugs me. He tells me, "Dad, I am so, so sorry. I'm so sorry for putting you through this," he says, "and thank you. Thank you for standing here, and I love you." I mean, I was amazed. Within the month and a week, he made a sergeant. And then after 3 months, he made a platoon sergeant. He was the youngest one there and running the rest of the platoon. And he basically excelled, not only through his education, but also on how to help the others that were falling behind, that would have a tendency of feeling down and thinking that they couldn't do it. He'd, you know, help move them along, because that program teaches as a group, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And if your weak link is weak, then you have to help strengthen him so your group can be stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to tell you, he came back a changed person. I can't thank that program enough, and I would love to bring that program to our county.
Yeah, I went through that.
Kids, an opportunity.
Yeah, I went through that program too. I was a troubled kid, and I was given a second chance. Pardon me?
You went through that program also?
No, I went through the United States Marine Corps Boot Camp at Parris Island, South Carolina. That was my program.
There you go. That is awesome. I've got to tell you, that Grizzly Youth Academy is at a National Guard station. But you have people from the Marines, the Army, and the Air Force, the sergeants, drill sergeants, working these kids. So I got to tell you, it was great.
Yeah, my kids used to give me shit when they got older, but when they were little, I used to tell them, adjust, relax. They were running around screaming and everything. Sit, adjust, relax. Wherever they were, they dropped. Now if I tell them that, it's a few choice words.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, there's a lot of kids pretty much everywhere. I mean, whether, you know, mom and dad are together or they're not. Sometimes, you know, dad could be locked up or mom could be locked up. And the only role model they have is a person on the street. And that's what you have to give these kids, an opportunity. I mean, they're craving attention. They're craving direction. And whether it's, you know, the kid on the street, or it could even be kids that are in a detention center, you know, give them the opportunity. And I'm a firm believer in giving them that opportunity to better themselves. I mean, you were fortunate you went to the service and you learned a lot. But a lot of these kids, they don't have that role model or that thought process to do that. And, I mean, this program gives them an opportunity before they're of legal age.
Yeah, I was headed to some serious, it wasn't the farm, I was headed to some serious time. And being that my dad was involved with the political scene and stuff, some things got talked about, and my dad had passed away a couple years before this happened. But he told my mom, he said, you know, sometimes he does things, but we want to make sure that, you know, he never goes to the big house. So when I did what I did and I got in trouble, I got an attorney who said, you know, you don't have anything on your record. He said, you ever think about joining the Marine Corps? I was like, fuck that. And then when the day I left, it was me, the recruiter, the district attorney, my attorney, and the judge. A half hour later, after the first 10 minutes, the judge said, how long is he going for? Recruiter said 3 years. Judge said not long enough. Went outside, changed it 3 to a 4, went back in. Still not long enough. 6 years, first tour.
Really?
Yep. Drove me to the airport. I left from the courthouse, downtown Chicago, to O'Hare. On the same day. What do I think about that? Best thing I ever did. One of the times I was actually smart and listened.
And that's exactly why I'd love to bring that program to our county.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, kids should have an opportunity early on in life. And a lot of times that's the only thing they see is the guy on the corner slinging the dope has money, has a nice car. They don't see him going to jail. They don't see him losing everything.
No. It's just like now, you know. Yeah, it's just like now. They call Chicago a Chirac.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. 38 people got murdered there last week.
Wow, last week alone.
No, last week alone.
Wow.
The only time you really hear about it, though, is if by mistake or something happens and a little girl gets shot. Then you hear about it and everybody jumps on a bandwagon. But any other time... Nah.
Well, see, that's again, an ounce of prevention could save a lot of time, effort, and lives.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm a firm believer in being progressive instead of reactive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anybody can be reactive, but unfortunately, you allow people to become victims.
Yeah.
So if that can be prevented... to me, in my eyes, that's well worth it.
Yeah, and you said that morale's down and things like that. Is anybody taking notice or just you?
Pretty much the line staff is pretty much taking notice. Morale used to be such that when I first started working that agency, it was like a family. And over the years, things began to change. Our supervisors used to have team outings on our day off, whether it was all of us get together and go to the movies, whether we'd all get together at a restaurant on our last night on, you know, and have a little meal and social time so bonds could be built. Then
mm-hmm.
It got to the point where our sergeants started getting in trouble for fraternizing with subordinates, and it's like, wait a minute. You're building a bond. You're building a trust. You're building a family, you know. And I mean, if your brother starts stepping out of line, what are you going to do? You're going to slap him in the head and say, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the type of family environment they had at work. But slowly they've changed it, and it's not that feeling anymore. Now people have a tendency of just looking at it like a simple job. They go, they give them the bare minimum, and they end up going home. And it's, I mean, that's what they've pushed us to. And the sad part is, you know, that's not what we're there for. You know,
mm-hmm.
we're there to give the public the best that we can. You know, whether it's work in the streets, investigations, or in the jails. You know, your job should be, you know, made to where you want to be there and help people the best you can. And
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, it's moved away from that. So one of my big things would be to help strengthen morale and boost, like, people to get them back to where they want to give you 110%. You know, if something happens and they're not looking at their clock, well, it's time to go. You know what, I'm going to stay until I get this done, and then I'll leave. You know, and we've pulled away from that. And, you know, the work ethic has slowly gone by the wayside, and that's something that I don't agree with.
Yeah. You know, my partner has a, like I said, he has a motorcycle shop, and the mayor used to be the chief of detectives. He came in one day, Yeah, and he came in one day and he told Bill, he said, hey, Bill, you know, we used to investigate you for a long time. I think it was like 14 years. We were always down here doing investigating something. And Bill said, well, instead of spending all that, I haven't done anything, but instead of spending all that money, you could have just gave it to me and I moved back to Carlsbad, which is the next town over.
Carlsbad, I love it for Legoland, gotta tell you.
Exactly. I mean, you know, sometimes people ask me, how do you like California? I say, it's the land of fruits and nuts. And you get it. You know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. The United States, like we talked last time, is a melting pot, but California, I have to tell you, is very unique.
Yeah.
It's unique in many, many ways. And you're absolutely correct.
I people ask me, well, how come you didn't move back to Chicago when you got out? Because I didn't want to. I went back in October for my niece's wedding, and I went down where I used to hang out, and the same guys are on the same corner.
There.
The same fucking thing they were doing 30 years ago.
But with less hair and a bigger belly, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. Only when I got out, I haven't cut my hair since I got out, and it's down, it's almost down. It's down to my belt on my back. And I just for shits and giggles, I was driving my brother's minivan. And everybody knows the secret now. Yes, I know how to drive a minivan. And I got out and I pulled off my bandana and I pulled out the rubber bands and I put on a pair of sunglasses and I walked by him twice before the third time I was coming back and the guy said, hey, I know you. But I walked by twice before they realized it was me because I haven't changed. I weighed 155 pounds when I went in and I weigh 155 pounds now.
That is awesome.
But, yeah, I can't believe that a lot of times people, you know,
they stagnate and stay in the same place. And, again, you know, it's like everything else. Give them the ability to better themselves, and a lot of times they will.
Yeah.
You know, they see something that they can do, and they do it. But, you know, you moved out, and, I mean, you're in a great place.
Yeah.
This state has a little of everything. It has the ocean. It has your deserts. It has your mountainous areas. Has snow. I mean, you name it, This state has got it.
Yeah, people ask me, hey, how do I get to your house? I say, well, coming up, the ocean's on the left. Going back, the ocean's on the right. When you get to this exit, which is the 76, you make a right turn, you go 9 miles in, you make a left, another right, and a left, and you're at my house.
Yeah,
can't explain it
anyway.
The one I want to start using is just ask an OPD guy. He'll tell you exactly where I live.
I lived in San Diego one time for a class for about a week.
Uh-huh.
I got to tell you, I fell in love with it.
Yeah,
beautiful.
I mean, when I found out I could ride my bike every day without a helmet, it's 70 to 80 degrees on any given day, year-round. I love the desert climate.
Absolutely, it's beautiful.
Hmm. And then, so, do you think? I mean, the guys that you work with, how do they? Are they? You got guys backing you up, or guys just telling you wish you luck, or what's the situation with that?
I got a lot of people that'll walk by and under their breath, they look at me and smile and say thank you. You know, unfortunately. People are scared to come forward, and I understand that. But it's a good feeling when you have people that you barely talk to because they work a different shift and you really don't see them, and they walk by and smile and say, hey, great, thank you.
Yeah.
No, and it's a good feeling. No, and again, people are scared to come forward, and I understand that.
Mm-hmm. Stacy, did you have any questions for Juan?
No, I'm just sitting here listening to you guys.
Okay.
How are you, young lady?
Oh, I'm good. How are you?
Stacy, Stacy, this is Stacy, this is Juan. Juan, this is Stacy. Stacy's calling you from the border, Massachusetts, and
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I've only been out of California a couple of times. I bet you the East Coast is gorgeous.
Yeah, well, on, you know, where you go. There's some spots that aren't too nice, but that's everywhere, you know. But, yeah, we do the ocean stuff.
Well, that's nice. It's unfortunately, I haven't really left California too much, and I'll put that on my to-do list to make sure I do get out of here. Go see the rest of the United States because there's a lot of history out there.
Yeah, there is.
You know, when I want to tease these guys that I know from the East Coast, Stacy's one of them for a while now. But when I want to tease these guys, I send them the weather report.
Yeah, you do.
It's 30 below. It's 30 below in December, and it's 75 and sunny here with a slight breeze off the ocean. 4-foot waves. I think I'm going surfing on the way home. I write back.
Yeah, as we're in the middle of a blizzard, getting like 12 to 24 inches of snow.
Digging your way out of the driveway. Yeah, digging your way out of the driveway. Yeah.
Yep, that's exactly it, and the doorway and everything else.
Yeah, the only time I like to see, I can go out and stand on the corner in front of my house and see snow on the mountains. That's how close I get to it now.
And that's why I say, got to tell you, this state is really great for that. You have a little bit of everything, and it's normally within only a few hours' drive.
Exactly. I mean, I pretty much ride 365.
The weather's nice up there all the time.
Exactly. And do you have say, all right, let me ask you this. I mean, where I work, I have guys above me and guys below me that I know very well. And I've broken bread with them and taken rides with them and taken them places and introduced their wives to TV stars and stuff like that. And it's not brownie points. It's just the way I live my life. And it's very rare that when you call these guys and they're there for you. I mean, do you have any people that you've been with over the years that are helping you out with this?
Absolutely. But again, a lot of times people have a tendency of trying to do things from the distance. Again, not to put themselves in harm's way, and I understand that.
Yeah.
You know, but like I said, I'm the type of person that'll stand up and whatever it takes, I'll take the hit and keep going.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer. If you bend over once, you're going to bend over twice.
Absolutely. And that's not me, so.
Yeah, no, me either. So, you were telling me that Evelyn, I was going to text her, but I know she's working, but she was very instrumental in getting you to be, you were trying to get on a ballot, but you ended up being a write-in candidate. Can you go into a little bit of that? Because somebody just asked me about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I first started, I pretty much in December started calling the elections office and finding out what it took to be on the ballot. And they pretty much told me, okay, you need so many signatures, and to avoid getting signatures, you can just pay $60 and 60-something cents.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, what else? And they explained that you needed an associate's with like 4 years or 5 years experience. If you had a bachelor's, it was less time on, and a master's with even less time on. I think it was 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay. So I called again in January, again in February, and they pretty much told me the same thing. In March, I went into a Kennedy class that they were putting on. I saw people there from the county. I was pretty much looking around to see who was there.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up grabbing one of the booklets and asked the people, you know, do we really need to stay, or is the information you're going to give out in the booklet? And they said, it's in the booklet. So that's fine. So I decided to leave. Went home, went through the booklet a number of times. And again, it was very vague, but it said if in lieu of getting signatures, you would pay the $2,060.60. So I waited till the last day to go in and put in paperwork to avoid causing problems at work.
Right.
I went in, filled out the application, gave them the money, which they took, and then they said, oh, by the way, you need 20 signatures. And by this time, it was 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
I said, 20 signatures? I said, I thought you told me, I said, the number of times that I called, that in lieu of signatures, you would bring in this amount of money. I said, which you have in your hands now.
Mm-hmm.
They said, well, yeah, but you still need 20 nomination signatures. I said, that's not what you told me. That's not what's in the book.
Right.
They said, well, you still need. So they will print out the forms, let me go get them. So they printed out the forms, and they took their time printing them out and stamping them 4 different times with different stamps, and then somebody had to come over and sign them. And they handed them to me at 4:10 and said, oh, you have until 5 o'clock to bring these back. Doesn't look like you're going to make it, does it?
Wow.
And I looked at the person, and Evelyn looked at the person and said, you know, everything's possible in this world.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back, you know, by 5 o'clock. So we got out, started making calls, lining people up for signatures, went out
mm-hmm.
and got 29 signatures. Started flying back and looking at the clock. I said, well, we got 10 minutes. Get on the freeway. And, of course, there's bumper-to-bumper traffic. So I call
right.
the place and say, hey, we're on our way back. There's a lot of traffic. Probably be there 5 or a minute or 2 after. Person on the other line said, 5 o'clock, that's it. Click and hung up the phone.
Wow.
So as we got closer, called them up. I said, it's 3 minutes to 5. I said, we should be there in 3 to 4 minutes. They said, if you're not here by 5, that's it. And hung up the phone. We got there a few minutes after 5, and, of course, the parking lot was empty. They closed up, locked up, and literally, by the way, it appeared, it looked like they ran out of there.
Wow.
To avoid us turning in the signatures and being on the ballot. They thought that that was going to stop me. Well,
yeah.
Unfortunately for them, it didn't stop me. Now I'm a write-in candidate, which makes it even harder for me to have people write my name down. But you know what? I'm not stopping. I'm very tenacious, and Evelyn was instrumental in making sure that everything was done to make sure that I was on that, at least write-in candidacy for this election. So,
yes, she's a pistol.
Oh, yes, she is. She's when she sets her mind to something, she goes and she doesn't stop till she's done. You know, and I'm a firm believer in shoot for the stars. I mean, you got to learn to set reasonable goals so you can attain them. Once you obtain that goal, then you set your next goal that's reasonable. Because if you're shooting for a star that's way out in the middle of space, you're halfway there and you have a tendency of giving up because it's too far.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to set reasonable goals. And like I said, this is the first time I've taken on anything like this. So it's a learning experience for myself, for Evelyn, and a number of other people that are assisting me in this. And I've got to tell you, she's been a driving force for this, and
I
know how to thank her.
Yeah, I've talked to her a couple times, and she's just she's very down to earth, and she knows what she wants to do, and she knows how to go do it.
Yeah, she's a very special individual.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, you don't find them any like that.
No, there's very few. And like I said, those are the ones you learn to cherish your friendship and really make sure that they are able to obtain whatever their goal in life is.
My friend that's on the phone, Stacy, she's another one of those individuals that I know.
Oh God, this is my, I'm glad.
This is my sister from another mother.
No, sister from another mister. Oh God, sister from another mother.
Hey, I screwed it up, but everybody got laughed. That's where I was going. But
yeah.
No, she's the same way.
Oh, that is awesome. Like I say, my hat's off to people like that because they're the ones that help the rest of us. You know, when we work towards something, a lot of times we're at a loss. And when you have somebody supporting you, behind every good man there's a strong woman to help keep them up and vice versa. I mean, it works both ways.
Absolutely. I noticed that when I was I saw that when I was a kid with my mother and father.
Absolutely.
And I to this day I still remember those four famous words my dad told me when I was a kid. Stay in school,
what's
son.
That?
Stay in school, son. And I taught my son. I took him to work with me one day, and I was on vacation, but I went to pick up my check, and there was two trucks there. Like 400 guys standing at the truck, and he goes, Dad, what's that? And I said, well, they're all waiting in line to cash their check. I said, well, you know what's wrong with that picture? And he said, what? I said, you want to be the guy signing the check, not the guy standing in line to cash the check.
That's true.
Absolutely.
I've been very, very fortunate in my career also. I've got to tell you, I've taken my kids to Disneyland, Knott's Berry Farm, Legoland. I even drove across the border a couple of times when I was buying tile for a house that I was building.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids were still young. We're at Disneyland. And I remember having one on my shoulders and one by the hand. And we're walking, and all of a sudden you hear from across the courtyard, hey, Lopez, Lopez. And when I hear something like that, it has a tendency of making me believe that it's somebody that was in custody because they're not calling me by my first name. So I look over and I see this group of people, and out of the group there's probably three or four that I had arrested in the past. And they walk over and they said, hey, just wanted to thank you, never had that chance to thank you. And I go, not a problem. And they go, you know, because you did what you did, you forced me into getting some help, and now I'm able to enjoy my family. And it's weird because as they said goodbye, they offered to buy us lunch, and we had already eaten. But as they walked away, my son looks at them and looks at me and says, Dad, he's probably like 10 years old, 11 years old. He says, Dad, who's that? I said, it's somebody that had a problem years back, and, you know, I was able to help him out. He says, oh, okay. He says, well, they know you from work? I said, well, yeah, I had to arrest them, and this is the reason why. And he says, wow. He says, and they're thanking you? I said, absolutely. I said, because sometimes in life we make mistakes, and a lot of times we have to bump our head to realize that we're making that mistake. I said, and the thing that differentiates each and every one of us is what we learn when we make a mistake. So I said, he learned, he was able to move on, and he has a good family now. You know, and that's why he's thankful.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had those experiences in many places, even across the border. So, again, everything you do always comes back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Bill and I, we spend more time in Mexico than two guys really should. But we have a lot of fun down there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, people are like, well, I don't want to go across the border. You know, I'm going to get shot. If you go, it's like anything else. If you walk and you look like you know what you're doing, nobody's going to bother you.
Stay on the main road. Absolutely. Stay on the main road. Don't end up going exploring where you shouldn't. down the main roads, everybody has a good time, and you come back, and it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a thing going on down here where a Marine is coming out to the VA in La Jolla, California. And he got off the freeway. He was going to meet some friends, and he was on the freeway, but he tried to get off, and he missed the last US exit. So when he went into Mexico, he stopped and asked how he could turn around, and they checked his truck and found 3 guns. Now they got him locked up. Everybody from congressmen and everybody's trying to have Mexico do the right thing. But, you know, when this first came to light, they said he was coming to California to go to the VA because of his post-traumatic stress disorder. So now everybody jumped on the, well, if he's got post-traumatic stress disorder, why did he have 3 guns in the car? To me, this guy spent 4 tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. To me, if you're walking around for 4 years with a gun strapped to your hip and carrying a rifle, you're going to be more comfortable if you know it's nearby, because he already knows that how to use it and when to use it. But if that's his niche to, you know, to keep him calm because he feels safe with it, then by all means. They didn't say anything about ammo. They just said guns. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, Bill and I have been down to Mexico, and I've seen more guns than I see here.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a whole different place.
Are you getting any media help up there, or just that one article that I saw?
I had an interview on Monday and still hasn't come out. Had an interview today, so I'm hoping that that'll come out tomorrow. I'm not sure why the first lady that interviewed me on Monday hasn't put out the story. When I called her and asked the first day, which was Wednesday, she said that there was a mountain lion that ended up going into a carport, and they ended up putting it to sleep and taking it back out into the wild, and that story took precedence. So I'm still waiting to see what they write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had some stuff happen with people that I know and Bill know, and we were talked to by a reporter, and the reporter is exactly what the reporter told Bill. I really don't want to talk to Philip no more because he's telling it the way it's supposed to be told, but we can't talk that way. And Bill said, well, this is America. I'm a veteran. He's a veteran. We fought for our country. The First Amendment rights to free speech. Why can't you talk about this? And she couldn't answer him, so Bill said, we're not doing the interview. She wouldn't be honest with us, and she wouldn't take it for the face value of what we wanted to say. And I kind of knew when she told me. Basically, and then afterwards, she told Bill, I'm a loose cannon. I could say anything that they can't say. Hey, that's why you have a seven-second delay button. But if the truth hurts,
don't ask a question that you don't want an answer to.
Exactly. But so we've got. Let's see. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and the election's on Tuesday the 3rd. Correct?
That's correct. June 3rd.
Okay. If your schedule permits, I will give you six more time slots until the election. And
thank you. Appreciate that.
No worries. And if we can get Evelyn to join us for maybe 20 minutes or a half hour next week, I'll let you handle that.
Okay. I will talk with her and try to get see when she's available and set that up.
Yeah. Tuesday or Thursday. And if you can't make it on a Tuesday or that Thursday, we have the option of Wednesday, too. So you'll have 9 more chances instead of 6.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Great. That'll be great. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and your listeners. It's to me, it's a blessing.
It's Yeah, I can. I'll give you a little update right now. Let's see here. Hold on.
Uh-huh. By the way,
give you an idea where people are. We've got Australia, Germany, Canada, the Ukraine, France, Spain, Russia, the United Kingdom, Turkey, as well as Poland, Malaysia, Spain, and Indonesia.
Wow.
Running around tonight. Yeah, and it's not quite as big numbers as it usually is, but it's we're at 48,512 people right now around the world that are listening to us talk.
Wow, that is awesome. And if any of your listeners ever have any questions, please feel free. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that they
have. And tomorrow, probably before 5 tomorrow, we'll get another 10,000 to 15,000 people to check this out overnight, because some of the people in the United Kingdom, for them right now, it's about, I think, 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning. They usually check in. Anywhere there's motorcycle clubs, they listen to this show. And just to share with you, like I said, I got some questions and stuff, and people asked, and yeah, I had the obvious ones, you know, he's a cop, he's always going to be a cop and all that. I look at it this way. If you have a bad time with a guy, then you had a bad time with that guy. But you didn't have a bad time with everybody. And like I said in the beginning, I'm not adversarial against the police as a population. I'm adversarial against the guys who don't do their job right.
Absolutely. People that have a tendency of abusing what they think they're supposed to, and it's sad. But again, that's why I say it takes a number of us to get rid of the ones that don't belong.
Mm-hmm. And what I just said, Melody up in L.A. just typed in, yep, amen.
Yeah. No, any of your listeners ever have any questions or anything else, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Yeah. Right now, not really, because I kind of like, there's people there. Hold on. Let's see. We got another lady from Boston. Her name is Eunice. And we'll see if she's got any questions for this, but go ahead, Eunice. Did you have any questions for Juan?
Well, no, not really, because I just come into the show, so if you could tell me just a little bit about it.
Well, he's running for sheriff up in San Mateo County, and they gave him a hard time about things, and he had to do it as a write-in candidate. They gave him a hard time about doing that, but he's on the ballot, and I'm supporting him. He's one of the guys that gets it.
Well, then I'll support him too. You know, I mean, I can't vote for him up there, but putting him on your show, Phil, as much as possible, I think would really help him. You know?
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah, this is his second time. He was supposed to be with me Tuesday, but you know the guys that park out in front of my house didn't like the way I was going to do my show, I guess, or my company
that night.
My company that night, so they kind of like knocked me off the air. But we don't have a white van tonight, and things are rolling pretty good.
Well, that's good.
Beautiful.
But
I'm sure you'll do it, but
yeah,
I think what you have to do, Juan, is be open and honest with them, you know. And I know you said you had two interviews with the reporters. Sometimes they can help you and sometimes they can kill you, you know.
Absolutely. And
you know,
my thing is being honest and transparent. So that way, that's the way I run my life, and that's the way I should run an agency. And
that's,
you know,
right.
We answer to the public, and that's why I believe they have a right to know.
Well, that's good. That's really good.
Yeah. And I said, Juan, you got 9 chances till that Tuesday. And then the elections, they stop at what, 6? Is it 6 now or 8 o'clock? Because I always do it.
I think it's probably 8 or 9, somewhere around there.
Okay. Well, then, I think what we'll do is we'll plan on Wednesday, the 4th, and we'll talk about the outcome. We'll talk about the outcome if that's okay with you.
Not a problem. The only thing is there's a lot of mail-in ballots. So
right.
Normally we'll find out what really happened towards the end of June. So that's the time they get everything counted up, and because the polls are done electronically, but the write-in ballots are done differently. So, I mean, my campaign so far is pretty much a grassroots type of campaign where I'm out there walking and talking with people. Evelyn's done a great job out there. A couple of the other people that are with us also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you wanna, whoever, let's put it this way, whoever in your little circle there, and if they want to come on and talk, or you know, that's fine too. Like I said, you got 1 in 9 chances, and if you want to bring someone on with you, I hope we can get Evelyn. But if you want to bring someone else on, yeah, just let me know ahead of time, and I'll post their names.
Perfect. Thank you.
And,
I appreciate the chance.
You got it, man. Anything you need, anything I can do to help you. And then if you want to hang out and listen to Eunice's, Eunice is a very unique lady. She's in her early 70s, and she's a pistol.
That is awesome.
Well, I got news yesterday so that the bill is in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And
you might want
to
bring
the House
one up. Let me interrupt you for a second, Eunice. Eunice is she's pioneering a bill on pedophilia in Boston. Give one a little update first before you tell them about your news.
Okay. All right. Excuse me. There's two great lawyers in Boston. Two great lawyers in Boston. That settled a $89 million suit against the Catholic Church on pedophilia. And there was 20 boys. And he settled this case. And 4 of the 20 boys committed suicide after. So, one, it has nothing to do with money, you know. My son was molested 33 years ago. And I've been fighting the Catholic Church. So these two lawyers and myself and several other people got together, and we wrote up a bill on the statute of limitations because there was only a 3-year window on the statute of limitations on any kind of pedophile case. So anyways, we brought it up to 55 years. And then the sentencing bill was changed on it, meaning first time out, if the pedophile gets caught the first time, you know he's done it several times anyways. They're not going to just tap him on the hand anymore. He's going to do 5 years. Second time out, he's going to do half of the sentence that he gets. If he gets 30 years, he's going to do 15 years. Third time out, he's not going to get out. Right now in Massachusetts, we have 350 children a day that are being sexually abused by fathers, by stepfathers, by next-door neighbors, by cousins, by uncles, by priests, by rabbis, you know, the whole nine yards. And this bill is to cover everything on pedophilia. And it's been in there since 2001. In 2012, they passed a bill to protect dogs, but not, and our bill was up, and we had to pull it from the floor because the House of Representatives changed that window to protect the insurance companies non-profitable organizations, and they try to get it passed without us knowing about it. And what happens, I have a very dear friend on the Hill that called me right away when I left the House of Representatives and was going to go to the Senate. So we all got together, and we said, no, we would kill the bill before we allow it to protect the insurance companies anymore. And through dear friends of mine in the Senate, they pulled the bill and they put it into what they call a conference committee.
Excuse me, Eunice?
To go over it. Yeah.
Eunice, I just got a message. Juan has to go, but he's going to be back probably Tuesday. So if you want to call in Tuesday, we can talk some more to Juan. But I'll let you keep talking about what you're talking about.
Okay. So anyways,
Juan,
what
hold
is
on,
happening?
Hold on, Juan.
Okay.
Juan?
For doing that.
Hello, Juan?
Hello.
Yeah, Juan. I understand you have to go, so I told Eunice that she can call back and bring you up to speed on Tuesday if that's fine.
Oh, that's perfect. I just wanted to tell her my hat's off for all the hard work that she's done, and it's great. It's people like her that help move things along for us.
Yeah, we have to do it, Juan.
Absolutely.
God gave us the free will, you know, and the terrible things that happen in this world isn't God's fault. It's human beings that do these terrible things. So
weak individuals that do things, absolutely.
That's right. That's right. So you fight for the good. That's what you try to do.
Absolutely.
I'll talk to you Tuesday, Juan. Just, I know you have to go, so good luck, and I'll talk to you Tuesday. Okay.
Thank you again.
You're welcome, Juan. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
So
go ahead, pick up where you left
off. It's in the Senate bill. I mean, it's on the Senate floor. Now it will go back to the House of Representatives. But we got a lot of good feedback from the House. And then it's going to go on in front of the governor's desk by the first week of June. And then we'll sign it. And this is a positive thing. It's not something that's not happening. I mean, Senator Brownsberger did a lot of work on this and has really pushed it right through. I think I told you they wanted to name the bill after me, and I told them, Phil, no, we've got to name it after one of the survivors, you know, or some of the boys. But I says, no, this isn't about me. This is about pedophilia and protecting our children.
Right.
So I declined from that, you know. And I says, no, I don't want that. So hopefully with, you know, by the 1st of June, it will be on the governor's desk, and he's got 10 days to sign it. But they want to do like a ceremony type thing because it's been there for so long. So it will be a good write-up and everything like that, Phil. So when they do that, I'll make sure that you get a copy of the write-up and the bill if you want, you know. So
yeah, that would be good. Yeah,
and
I'll post that for you.
Yeah, it's you know, and we're sure that a lot of other states are going to be following the program as far as, you know, the way we did it. And we're going to, Brownsberger is going to try, and she's, Congressman Clark now is going to try to get it so we can have it national, you know, that it would be a federal law, so. That would be a good thing that we can work on that too now. So, but that's where it's at, and I was very happy to get the phone call yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for you.
So it should be in the House of Representatives by next week.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy for that. You know, I'm happy for everybody that works so hard in that, you know, and it'll be a good thing. So I'll be going in signing the bill with the rest of the people, you know, and the governor will give us the pen that we use to sign it with. And So I know there'll be media coverage on this now, so that would be good.
Well, good for you.
You know.
Good for you.
Yeah, I did call in Tuesday night, and naturally there was no show, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, when there's no show, by this time you should know what happened.
Yeah, yeah. I knew, you know, something happened that they shut it down or something. I just don't understand how they can get away with this. This is, it's supposed to be free speech, isn't it?
Yeah, well, some people don't know what that means.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Mm-hmm.
That is too bad. So, but did I tell you the horror that I had getting home here? Did you hear about Fort Lauderdale? Well, when I flew out, was supposed to fly out last Wednesday, and I had to go to Fort Lauderdale because I was taking a flight right into Worcester. And when I got there, it was total chaos.
Mm-hmm.
A construction company was working on one of the runways, and they cut the cables to all the lights and all the computers. Not one plane could go out of Fort Lauderdale that day.
Wow.
So they had to put us up, and it wasn't just my airline. It was every airline, you know. And that's an international airport, so planes couldn't land and planes couldn't take off because they had no way to check, you know, the reservations and everything. So they had to set us up in a hotel for the night and pay for a couple of meals. And then the next day we get out, and it was like 3 hours later than what we were supposed to go out, but we get out. So I flew into Boston, and the van was waiting for me, and he said, Jesus, I can't imagine why we've had so many people on the vans, you know. And I told him, I said, it was because of Fort Lauderdale really shutting down. So anyways, we get on the turnpike, Phil. There was an accident. So we were on the turnpike for 3.5 hours. It was just one of those hellholes, you know, flights home. But I finally got home about 9 o'clock Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the weather's been beautiful up here since I've come home. You know, it's really been nice.
Yeah, it's the high 60s, low 70s, with a little cloud cover, but it's my kind of place.
Yeah, yeah, it's, you know, I talked to Nara a couple of times. And
mm-hmm.
So, but it's just been, you know, I've been busy every single day. Today I went down to St. John's and I worked in the soup kitchen all
mm-hmm.
morning, you know, get up some food and stuff like that. I have to find something to do, you know. I just can't sit around the house and do nothing. So I said I'd volunteer down there. So it was, you know, when you do that, Phil, and you see the people, and you know what you've got, you know, you thank God for it. You know, when I see family today that come in for breakfast and just hang around a couple of more hours to have lunch, mm-hmm. you know, you got to feel grateful for what you've got.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
So it's terrible. It's terrible. And thank God that, I think I had told you, St. John's had the Hanover Theater and all these entertainers come in to raise money to do this, to build this soup kitchen. You know, they actually built a brand new soup kitchen. And they got tons of people that come in and volunteer, and they feed like anywhere from 300 to 400 people daily, twice
mm-hmm.
a day. So that's like 800 people. You know, you double count it, and they come in and they give them those cardboard boxes to put food in to take home. And then on one area, they have boxes of food like bread and pastry and different things that they can take home, you know. And they do this 7 days a week. Imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen all kinds of crazy stuff. The last 25 years, kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're supposed to be doing, you know. I mean, just like you and Bill, you know, you do all that charitable work and stuff like that, and it's not to make us look good, it's to make us feel good. And I think sometimes people forget that, you know, and that's what it's all about, you know.
Absolutely.
I've learned in a short time that if you really sit and think about it, you know, people say, God, why do you let this happen? God, why do you let that happen? And God gave us all free will, you know. And it's not God that does it. If you really think about it, it's human beings that have made all this chaos, you know. And it took me a long time to learn that God did not do these things. And he will correct it. You know, he will correct it. And the people that do all these bad things, you know, their day is going to come for a reckoning.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that right now.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
But I met people down there today that just stood there and bragged about all the things that they're doing, and they're not doing nothing. Yes, you know what I mean? They didn't do nothing. See, I learned you don't brag about what you've done. And, I mean, I just told you today, I mean, I do a lot of things that people don't know that I do. And it's for me. It's not for them. It's to make me feel good. So,
have you run into Hermes since you've been back?
Nope, he won't talk to me, so I'll talk to you about that off the air.
Oh, okay.
And, if you're going to be at the house after, because I really do want to explain it to you. Not that you have to pick and choose, I don't want that, but
don't,
you have to understand.
Don't give out any more information, but as soon as I sign off here in a couple of minutes, I have to get up at... So what I'll do is I'll hit you up sometime during the day tomorrow.
Okay. That's
okay?
Good.
And then
we're
down to 1 minute. I want to thank you, Funes, for calling in. I want to thank Juan Lopez for calling in and telling us all about Juan Lopez. And he's going to be a write-in candidate for San Mateo County Sheriff. So anybody listening, Juan's a good guy. He gets it. And... I'm going to let Charlie Baker take us out with a song called Ride, and I'll talk to you Tuesday.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye, dear.
Desert air is good. Yeah.